We have with us live in the studios once again, Joff Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both formerly with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Alrighty. Interesting news out this week locally that I think affects all of us.
Yeah, the Tacoma police were caught with a new surveillance toy. Actually, it's not a new surveillance toy. They bought it back in 2000 and at least in 2007, possibly started the purchase process earlier. The Tacoma News Tribune reported this week that the Tacoma Police Department bought and has been using for at least 6 years a Stingray device. That's a piece of equipment that can gather bulk cell phone data within about a mile and a half radius. And they bought it without the approval of apparently of the Tacoma city government, or in particular the city council of Tacoma. And we know that they have it, not because the Tacoma Police Department admitted outright to the TNT, the Tacoma News Tribune, but that the Pierce County Sheriff's Department confirmed to them that they had borrowed it from the Tacoma Police Department. In addition, purchase orders and invoices that the newspaper looked at also confirmed that, yes, they had purchased that piece of equipment and have purchased software and equipment upgrades since then. The Tacoma Police Department purchased it through a Department of Justice law enforcement grant, which they won in 2007, to be used in drug enforcement cases. That's what the money was for. The actual device is made by a company called Harris, and the device is actually supposed to be used for intercepting cell phones that could trigger improvised explosive devices, like you see a lot of those in the continental U.S. And of course, it's not been used for that. And we don't really know what it's been used for, because apparently the Tacoma Police Department hasn't been disclosing to judges that they are using the device when they go to a judge to get a pen authorization to search for cell phone data. Typically, pen authorizations are issued by judges so that the police can go to a cell phone company with a cell phone number and say, can we get all of the data linked to this one cell phone number? Can you tell me, you know, who they called at what times, what their location data is, et cetera? But this device doesn't do that. This device, as I said, collects bulk cell phone information. So anything within a mile and a half radius. And how it works is it pretends to look like a cell phone tower. So every cell phone within a certain radius, in this case a mile and a half, when you go to place a call, that your cell phone, it looks for the nearest and strongest signal from the nearest cell phone tower, and it goes automatically to that. It can't recognize a device that's spoofing as a cell phone tower like this is. So that's how it collects data. It sucks in all that data from location data and phone information, who you're dialing, if you're texting, the contents of your text message, et cetera, from all of those cell phones. And then it collects all that data, and then it routes the cell phones onto the next cell phone tower. So your cell phone, you would never know that it's gone through a Stingray device. Pierce County recently paid $8,400 in 2012 to buy software to analyze bulk cell phone data. And then in February of this year, the Tacoma Police Department bought similar but more robust software from a company called Verint for about $51,000 that could analyze the bulk data. So even though the Tacoma Police Department is saying, oh, we don't save that data, we don't save any of the stuff we collect from bystanders and people who just happen to be in the same area, why then would they need the software to help them sift through that and pull out information when they should just be collecting and saving the information from one cell phone?
Bulky. a couple of thoughts about that. Number one, because this is technology that's been around for a few years, you can be sure that it's pretty widespread among law enforcement agencies. Tacoma, in terms of the police department's budget, is only about one third the size of the Seattle Police Department. So it's a fairly safe bet that other law enforcement agencies, and particularly I'm thinking of the Seattle Police Department and King County Sheriff's Office, both of which have rather poor records of disclosure around these kind of technologies, Some reasonably legitimate questions ought to be asked of there as well. And the second thing is, this is not the Department of Homeland Security grants that we've been hearing about. This is not surplus military equipment that we've been hearing about in the wake of Ferguson this week. People are certainly starting to take a look at more militarized and more surveillance-oriented technology and law enforcement in general, but it underscores how many different sources this stuff is coming from, how many different levels of federal agency grants are putting this kind of technology, and private industry for that matter, are putting this kind of technology into local law enforcement's hands, and how little transparency and how little control and accountability is in place to oversee how it's being used.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize, too, that it isn't just the Tacoma Police Department that's been using this device. They admitted to, eventually this week, admitted yes to the Tacoma News Tribune that they had purchased the device and were using it. They've used it 129 times, but they've loaned it out to local agencies like the Pierce County Sheriff's Department, the DEA in Seattle, and the DEA office in Tacoma, to Kitsap County, to King County, to Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, and several other task forces, but not to the Seattle Police Department, I notice. So it makes me wonder if the SPD has something similar, such that they don't need to borrow the Tacoma Police Department's version.
And one of the conditions of selling this equipment to law enforcement is that that entity that they sell it to will not reveal its use to the public.
Yeah.
That's actually in the contract.
There's a contract that the Tacoma Police Department has with the FBI. It's a non-disclosure agreement not to tell the public that they have the device and that they're using it and what cases that they're using it in. And that includes telling judges that are supposed to review these cases in order to ensure your privacy rights, whether or not the police really should have access to your privacy data, including your cell phone data. And under this non-disclosure agreement, that seems to supersede that constitutional right we have to privacy.
That's called a police state, I believe.
Yes, I believe so.
All right. And we'll inevitably be hearing more about that as the weeks go on.
Yeah, she'll be getting a phone call.
Or you may not know that you're being monitored. But
all right, let's move on. Some big donations in this week for I-594.
Yeah, yet another example of big money dominating the political process, even though in this case it's generally for the good. Short term, anyway, this having to do with Initiative 594, which would close the gun show loophole around firearms sales. And this will be on November's ballot, along with a competing initiative from pro-gun advocates. But Bill Gates and Chuck Hanauer are kicking in another $1 million apiece to I-594 this week. There are no state limits for the state of Washington on how much money any individual can donate to a ballot measure. There are for elected offices, but not for ballot measures. This comes on the heels of Paul Allen and Steve Ballmer both having done $500,000 donations. And I believe Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, who's very, very wealthy from his media holdings, has also made a major contribution to that. Hanauer's total contributions to I-594 now stand at nearly $1.5 million. The Gates are over $1 million. The Ballmers are at $600,000. Allen's at $500,000. And I-594 has now raised over $5.8 million. However, they've done it from 7,500 different donors, so there is genuine grassroots support for this, unlike a number of past initiatives where single individuals have really put a lot of money in and made it a viable campaign. In this case, the National Rifle Association had previously pledged to put everything it could into defeating I-594, but the NRA may be shown up to be a paper tiger, not just locally but nationally, in the context of this kind of money onslaught, because they can't match it. The NRA's entire lobbying and local campaign budget for the country is less than what's already been donated by our various local zillionaires. The NRA's official No on 594 campaign has only raised about $25,000 so far, and the No campaign or the I-591, which is the pro-guns initiative, has raised $1.1 million so far. So it's a lagging quite a bit behind the gun show initiative. Now, again, you're going to see a lot more money coming into these campaigns from all over the country, both positive and negative, now that we're going to be past Labor Day this weekend and the political season for November will open up in usual. So anybody who watches live TV anymore, you are going to be bombarded with ads during the month of October. Something to look forward to.
And the last poll I saw on both of these initiatives, it looked like there was strong support for both. So we don't know what will happen if both pass. That would be a very interesting scenario, I think.
Yeah. Well, for lawyers, certainly it will be, because they'll be the ones who get paid with all that money.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to national and problems with our rail transportation.
Yeah. The New York Times had a report this week on rail transport problems in the upper Midwest. Apparently, crude oil from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota is tying up most of the available rail cars and capacity on the nation's railway lines, leaving almost no space for agricultural products. The American Midwest really has often been referred to as the breadbasket of the world. Rail takes wheat, corn, sugar, beets, soybeans, all sorts of different crops as well. Those four are the main ones, though. West to the West Coast ports to be shipped to Asia, and East to East Coast ports to be shipped to Europe. As of August 22nd, Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway had a backlog of about 1,336 rail cars worth of grain and other food products that it hadn't shipped yet. And Canadian Pacific had another backlog of almost 1,000 rail cars. That's according to the New York Times. Now, North Dakota farmers are projected to be losing more than $160 million from January through July just because of this backup.
Who cares about that?
And that's just the North Dakota farmers. There are other farmers in other states in the Midwest who are suffering backups, too. And that's not counting this year's record harvest, which is just getting underway. There's expected to be a record harvest of wheat. Also of soybeans, and corn's doing pretty well, too. So a lot of that food's just going to lay on the ground and rot because there's not the rail capacity. And because the railway lines, which are privately owned and have shareholders that demand double-digit returns, rates of return on their investment, are going after the oil shipments because those are the most profitable. In the meantime, we're going to see shortages on the grocery store shelves because not only is this food not being transported for export, it's not being transported to food processors here in the United States that need it to go into their products. We're also going to see rising food prices here and around the world. And we know what happens when that happens. You get food riots and political instability.
And that, just to bring it back to local, that's also been one of the major criticisms of the various coal export terminal proposals in the Pacific Northwest. The two that are remaining that are still live are Cherry Point up near Bellingham and then one at the Port of Longview. Both of those would need to go both across Stevens Pass and that major rail corridor and the Columbia Gorge in terms of east-west. And those are the same east-west corridors that are used to ship some of the Midwestern agricultural products to West Coast ports for shipment to the parts of the West Coast and to Asia. And again, not only agricultural products, but all kinds of products that go east-west. The concern is that the rail capacity in the Pacific Northwest is nowhere near what is necessary to accommodate these massive oil and coal trains as well as the existing traffic. Very, very concerning that bottleneck is not being addressed and that companies like BNSF have every financial motivation to go with the higher paying energy shipments.
All right, let's move on. New federal deficit projections this week?
Yeah, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office released their projections on the federal deficit. And their prediction is that the federal deficit will be about $506 billion for this fiscal year, which ends at the end of September. That's lower than the $168 billion deficit last year. And it's the fifth straight year that the deficits have been decreasing in size. Now, in 2009, the federal deficit was about 9.8% of gross domestic product. This year, it'll be about 2.9% of GDP. That's lower than the average over the last 40 years, which has been about 3.1%. Good news, right? It might be useful to ask why the deficit has been decreasing. There's a couple reasons. One is the low interest rates that we have going right now means the government can borrow for cheap. And they don't have to pay a lot of interest on the federal deficit. And, of course, interest payments add to the deficit. Medicare savings from the Affordable Care Act. That's a huge chunk of why the federal deficit is falling. Another reason why the Affordable Care Act has been net good for this country.
I thought it was supposed to bankrupt the federal government.
That's
what Fox News said.
If you're a Republican, live in an alternate universe, yes, that's the case. But for those of us who live in the real world, that's not the case. But, you know, it would be even lower. The deficit would be even lower if corporations and businesses paid their share of taxes. So I just want to talk for a minute about corporate income taxes, because people have been paying a lot of attention to inversions in the news. And if you haven't heard of corporate tax inversions, it's when a U.S. corporation buys a foreign company and decides to relocate their head offices to that foreign company in order to avoid paying U.S. taxes, even though the bulk of their business is still within the United States. That's a corporate inversion. Now, that's just one strategy that corporations and other businesses use to avoid taxes. I think the main one is reorganizing your business structure from being a regular corporation or what's called a C corporation. You can reorganize it as a limited partnership or an S corporation, or a real estate investment trust if you own real estate. All of those are flow-through entities, which means that they pay zero tax at the corporate level. All of their profits are paid through to their shareholders or partners, and those guys pay taxes, usually at a lower tax rate.
Wasn't that what Enron kind of pioneered back in the day, that they were doing some of those strategies with
shell
companies?
Yeah, no, that's different. They were hiding debts in shell companies to make their balance sheet look better.
Okay. So it's so hard to keep them straight.
It is hard to keep all of the tricks straight, and there are a lot of them. In addition, for corporations that remain as standard corporations or C corps, they can take advantage of all kinds of exemptions and tax credits and deductions to lower their tax rates to get it almost to zero. In fact, only 6% of all businesses in the United States are organized as traditional corporations and pay some kind of corporate income tax. The rest are all organized as these flow-through corporations that pay zero tax at the corporate tax level. And of the 6% of businesses that are organized as standard corporations, the average rate is not 36%, which is the what's called the nominal corporate tax rate. It's 12.6%. So being able to cut your tax bill in half with all kinds of tricks and loopholes in the tax code means that, yes, we do need corporate tax reform, but we don't need it in order to cut the corporate tax burden. We need it to close all these loopholes so that corporations pay their fair share. So instead of paying making up only 10% of federal tax revenue, as they will this year, corporations will get closer to the 30% of federal tax revenue that they paid in the 1950s. I think that's what the real corporate tax reform ought to do.
All right. Finally, on National, the article on private companies selling gear.
Yeah, Washington Post had a great investigative piece this week. We talked a little bit at the local level with what was going on with the Tacoma Police Department and cell phone technology. Turns out at the national level and international level, for that matter, surveillance technology also being a booming business. Companies that make and sell surveillance technology targeting law enforcement to that with, again, non non-disclosure agreements and seeking to limit public information about the system's capabilities and client lists as well, primarily by marketing the technology directly to the various law enforcement and intelligence agencies through international conferences that are closed to members of the public and, for that matter, journalists. The Post came up with a 24-page marketing brochure for a company called Skylock, which is one of the many companies involved in this. It's a cellular tracking system sold by Verint, which is a maker of analytic systems based on Long Island, carrying the subtitle Locate, Track, Manipulate. And the document from 2013, labeled Commercially Confidential, says these systems offer government agencies, and you'll love this quote simply because it's so Orwellian, they offer government agencies a cost-effective new approach to obtaining global location information concerning known targets, which is to say the ability to give law enforcement and intelligence agencies without any kind of public insight whatsoever information on where anybody is at any given moment through cell phone tracking. The brochure includes screenshots of maps depicting location tracking in what appears to be Mexico, Nigeria, South Africa, Brazil, Congo, the United Arab Emirates, Zimbabwe, and several other countries. The United States quite possibly being one of these, although again, because it's not public, we don't know. Verint says on its website that it's a global leader in actionable intelligence solutions for customer engagement, optimization, security, intelligence, and fraud risk and compliance, with clients in more than 10,000 organizations in over 180 countries.
Well, and one of those clients is the Tacoma Police Department.
Yes. So this is this again is the tail end side or the origin side of what Maria was talking about earlier has been going on in Pierce County and quite possibly King County. That this is a global phenomenon, and it's a global phenomenon with almost no accountability at the local or federal level, and a lot of that is hard baked into the contracts as well, that there be no public accountability and no public information on what's going on. So very, very disturbing report. I would encourage people to check it out.
All right, moving on to international, starting with ISIS.
Yeah, this week the Pentagon continued to warn that ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, are a terrorist threat to the U.S. But Homeland Security Secretary Jeremiah Johnson told the Guardian newspaper of London, and this is a direct quote, he said, "At present, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FBI are unaware of any specific credible threat to the U.S. homeland from ISIS." So there you have it from the guy who ought to know that ISIS is not a terrorist threat, particularly to the U.S. homeland. But I do want to point out that they do threaten Israel. This week, ISIS attacked a border crossing in the Golan Heights on the Syrian border with Israel, the main border crossing. That raises the risk that Israel will get involved in the Syrian-Iraqi conflagration more than they have in the past. And, of course, that means that it really will become a regional conflict. Now, it is a regional conflict right now. You've got more than two governments involved there, especially now that you have Turkey arming the Kurds and helping to arm the Syrian opposition. And the U.S. is helping that along by bringing in other nations, by asking Turkey for use of their air bases, for asking Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates to get involved.
And those countries had already been arming Syrian rebels. The United States has been doing pass-through weapons to them through Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states.
Yeah, and Qatar has been showing a preference for ISIS and the Nusra Front and these Islamic militant groups that have taken control of northern Iraq and northern Syria. So And, you know, they're not on the same side as a nation like United Arab Emirates. We saw that this week when the United Arab Emirates flew fighter jets from Egyptian air bases into Libya to bomb and strafe Islamic militants that have been funded and supported by Qatar in Libya. So that's also a regional conflict now. So the real risk of ISIS and what's going on over in the Middle East is not that that there's going to be a terrorist attack here in the U.S. homeland. It's turning smaller conflicts into large regional wars. And there are some nations there in the Middle East that have nukes, particularly Israel. And I think Israel might be more willing to use, quote unquote, tactical nuclear weapons than we think they are.
All right. TEPCO.
Yeah, this week, TEPCO, which has been managing the Fukushima plant that was destroyed during the Japanese earthquake some 3.5 years ago, admitted this week that the radiation leaks are out of control, that billions of becquerels of radiation are leaking into the Pacific Ocean. Billion becquerels of cesium-137, 5 billion becquerels of strontium-90, and 150 billion becquerels of tritium are being released daily into the Pacific Ocean from the damaged Fukushima Daiichi plant. That was a shock, but it also points up the problem with leaving nuclear plants in the hands of private companies. They simply don't have the resources to get a disaster like this under control.
And it's not like, and they've also been unwilling to allow even the Japanese government, really, but certainly international agencies to have much access to information around this from the get-go, let alone having international resources brought in to control what really is an international problem.
Yeah, and three years ago when it happened, I was saying it's got to be an international response to this, and that just has not happened.
They also had out this week multiple articles in the Japanese papers about how TEPCO, at the time, it's now becoming clear, was ready to abandon. They were going to leave if the prime minister.
Yeah, that's been known for a while.
Force them. Yeah, but this is actually like
they're actually releasing the documents and support for that.
Just a couple minutes left. Developments regarding the Ebola in Africa.
The UN World Health Organization announced this week that they expect more than 20,000 people to contract Ebola before it's brought under control in West Africa. So far, about 3,069 people have caught the disease, and 1,552 have died in four countries in West Africa, in Guinea, Liberia, where it's particularly out of control, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria, where the news this week was that it had spread outside of the Nigerian capital of Lagos, and that the first case had also appeared in a fifth country, in Senegal, which is a popular tourist destination. So things are not progressing as they should be over in West Africa. The World Health Organization estimated that they need about 750 international and 12,000 local health workers. And of course, with a disease like Ebola, where health workers have to wear full protective gear in an extremely hot environment, it's going to be really, really hard to recruit people, particularly international healthcare workers. If folks want to contribute to the one aid organization that is currently over there working their hardest to try and stop it, you can go online and contribute to Doctors Without Borders. And I would encourage you to do that.
Yeah. Speaking of crises that demand an international response that hasn't been forthcoming.
Yes.
And in fact, this week, Canada pulled out a couple more
Yes, in fact, a lot of people who are over there trying to help are being pulled out by their governments.
These are experienced people that would be able to deal with this. And
the absolute
and who are willing to take on the risk, but the governments are afraid of liability and don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
yep.
No events.
Another cheerful week. No events this week. Bumper Shoot is certainly under full force, but this is the final Labor Day weekend, and weather is finally starting to cool off. So get out and enjoy the weather while you can.
Yeah, and don't forget your raincoat, because it will rain a little bit.